Hello, everyone. This is Gary Boomershine and Chris Pico for another weekly REI Vault team huddle call. Excited to have all of you. Today is Tuesday, December 15th, 2015. Getting ready to wrap up the year. Hopefully a strong year for everybody in 2015, and excited about the prospects for next year. Opportunity to ask questions. I see a few new people that are on this call. It's an opportunity to ask really any question that you want. It can be related to marketing, Podio, something technical. And what we have found is usually we're talking more real estate stuff here. So don't be shy. You can press *5. We do keep everyone muted so we don't have a lot of background noise. But if you press *5, Chris and I will see that you've raised your hand. We can bring you into the call so you can ask your question. And once we have no more people raising their hand by pressing *5, then we'll end the call. So, Chris, any updates that you want to share?
I don't have any updates. I would have to say I deliberately did not ask you anything about your Friday because I did want to know all the gory details, but I figured I would wait to hear it one time on the call today.
Yeah, I texted you and said, hey, I picked up the deal, and I didn't really hear anything back. So
that was because I was gonna ask you about it today while everybody's on the phone.
Yeah, awesome. Hold on, I'm gonna bring Aaron in. Aaron, you on?
Hey there.
Hey, how are you?
Good. How are you?
Yeah. So, quick little announcement for us. So, Aaron is a sales acquisition manager for Chris and myself. She's in Colorado and absolutely amazing. So, I give you great credit. Erin is a licensed real estate agent, and she is working our deals as the acquisition manager. We're about ready to add some salespeople for her. We've got one VA, but Erin knocked down what I consider a pretty nice elephant deal. It was a creative deal. It was something. It was not a wholesale. We're actually picking it up creatively. We can walk through that, and you guys can ask questions if you want. But both Aaron and I jumped on a plane and flew out to Arizona on Friday to actually sign the seller, and we actually signed everything. We signed the contracts, and we did the deed and the conveyance documents, and actually took formal ownership of the property on Friday. We got to record that deed this next day or two. But was that pretty exciting, Aaron?
Yeah, I loved it. It was such a good experience.
We did it in a Starbucks. It was awesome. At a Starbucks, had the notary sitting at the table, kind of putting pressure because he had another appointment. And we should make the deal should net us about $100,000, maybe a little bit more. We're estimating on the low side, but maybe some upside. Is that about right, Aaron?
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Yeah. So, what was your take? By the way, this is the first time that Aaron and I met face-to-face. So it was great. We actually met at the airport. I picked her up, went and had a quick lunch. I walked her through exactly what we were going to do. And did the deal go down pretty much as I shared? I basically said he'll probably ask a lot of questions at the front end, and then all of a sudden when we get into the signing, it'll probably be piece of cake. Was that about right?
Yeah, exactly right. There was that pivotal moment where he just said, okay, I'm ready. And then
let's do it. Let's see. It's probably a 120-day deal, Chris. We'll probably be in and out in 120 days. We're picking up it's a house really set up right now as a duplex, and then it has two parcels. I caved with him on one point, and we're actually giving him an additional $7,500. And the way that we're doing it is we're actually coming up with very little money on the front end. In fact, I gave him a $100 bill. I literally gave him a $100 bill, didn't I?
Yes.
So one of the things I do on some of these deals where we're putting money is California a contract is considered consideration. However, most of the states of the country, consideration actually is in the form of money, right? And so what I've seen, you could actually have a check. So, you know, we actually had a deposit of $100, Chris. However, I've seen the situation if the seller does not cash that check, right? And then if they sue down the road, the courts actually, there's case law where the courts will unwind a deal if there hasn't been any consideration. And so what I do is I write a check. So I wrote out a check for $100, and then I have him endorse it. So he endorsed it back to me. So I have that. That's for my files. And then I pulled out a crisp $100 bill and handed it to him. And just, you know, he thought it was great. Did it right in Starbucks. So
I don't think he was expecting that either.
He probably didn't expect the 50 pages of documents that I gave him either.
No, that's true.
Yeah. So, but it pretty much went like clockwork for the most part. Did Aaron?
It did. I didn't know if you wanted to share the story about having to find two witnesses though.
Oh yeah, yeah. So I'm using Lou Brown's paperwork. So I've used his paperwork for probably the last 8 years. And so some of the documents actually require not only a notary, but two witnesses. And that's not required in California. But I wanted to make sure that a couple of the documents had it. So we're in Starbucks, and we walked around, and Aaron looked at me, and I said, Aaron, can you get a couple of witnesses? And she said, you want me to do it? And I'm like, nice, pretty face like you. Just going to get a yes faster than somebody like me. So Aaron actually walked to a couple of people in Starbucks and said, would you guys mind being a witness for us on a document? It was awesome. Everybody's drinking their coffee and got a couple of witnesses, and it was easy enough.
It was funny.
So then now that you have the – so now that the deals are on the contract, then what's the timeline of events?
Yeah, maybe – I put together a PowerPoint document for Aaron, and might be helpful at some point. But basically the process is I bought the property, and then I conveyed title pretty much all in one sitting. So the way it worked is he signed a contract, and then we're putting the property into a trust, into a land trust. Is the way we're going to do it. And then we're basically assigning, we'll have Aaron as the trustee of the trust. And I created a quick claim deed that she could basically hand to the title company and have them record the trust. I'm sorry, record the quick claim deed. So the seller is actually, he quick claim deed from his own name to his trust. And then Aaron is basically going to be the trustee. So that's one document. And then a trust certificate is the way I do it. It's really just a one page. That's what the title company needs. We don't actually let them see any of the other documents. They just need the trust certificate, which is really just a notarized document that Aaron provides. It says this is a bona fide factual agreement. And there's some stuff that's in there, like is it revocable or irrevocable, and what's the name of it and the effective date, et cetera. And so, and then I also have trust instructions that she can hand to the title company that is signed by the owner that says that she's instructed to go ahead and have this deed recorded. And so we do that through the title company, so that's going to happen this week, and then we actually have physical ownership. That's step one. Step number two is now we'll have ownership. We bought the property. We have physical ownership of the property. And then and we're actually going to sell this through a real estate agent. Aaron has a really, really good agent. It's how we're going to maximize the profits on this deal. And so about the second or third week of January, the owner's kids are still living there. And so they're going to be getting out somewhere between the 15th and the 21st of January. And we're going to give them $3,000 as part of the deal that was written into the contract upon their move out. that we're going to basically pay for part of their rent and some of their moving expenses for the total amount of $3,000. And then the remaining balance, we're taking over the property. We're actually going to take the property subject to, which means we're going to make the mortgage payment, so $1,500 a month. And that'll be our cost. And that, and then the seller will actually carry back a note until we resell the property. And so anyway, that's how we ended up doing it. So we'll get the property listed. Go ahead.
At zero interest.
Yeah, the note was actually structured at zero interest. And I also set it up where I'm limited on the payment. So if the deal were to go bad, there is an exit parachute clause in there. And a way to sort of get out of that deal, which won't happen, but just a little extra precaution. And then he's going to carry back a note for $27,500. However, the payments that we make will actually go against that. So if we make three monthly payments of $1,500, that's $4,500, and that will go against the amount owed to him. And so that's how we structured that deal. So we'll get the property. It'll be a pocket listing next week. The agent already has some buyers that are interested in this, I believe, potentially. And so we may get it locked up in contract sooner rather than later and then try to sell it hopefully in February. Is that about right, Erin?
Yeah, that's the goal. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. So total amount of money, we're gonna do a little cleanup of the property. We're going to bring a couple of dumpsters out there, I think three dumpsters, and for $650 we'll have some people clean up the property. And there's a lot of trash on the property. And so I also did a bill of sale so that anything that is remaining on the property ours as of the day that the kids are off. So most of this paperwork is just a kind of a CYA to cover us to make sure everything goes well. But the most important was the purchase agreement, moving the property into a trust with full execution and authority, which is a few notary documents, and then we're good to go. And so nobody really knows that we'll be buying the property. That's all behind the scenes. And then once we sell the property, we'll give wire instructions to the title company for final payment. And so we'll create what's called a demand. There'll be a demand that we'll create for the payment to the owner. With instructions, and then we'll have wire instructions for the payment to us, and then we'll provide the tax IDs so that the taxes are managed and those get taken care of by title and escrow and reported properly. So it's pretty easy once you start doing it, but, you know, it's the difference. I don't even know if we would have made money on this as a wholesale deal. We may have made $10,000 to $15,000 on it. But we're taking this deal and we'll turn it into 100 creatively, and we might have somewhere between $12,000 and $15,000 in cash on this one.
Now, in this one here, the money really would come from the sale of the lots, not the sale of the house. Is that right?
Yeah, yeah. Realistically, the house is worth about what we paid for it, and so the value, the upside, is really in the lot, and. So that's where we'll be making our money. But most likely, Chris, we'll be selling the whole package together to a buyer. So that's the way it's going to most likely go down, is sell the whole package to a single buyer. You said, what was the zoning? You said it was zoned for multi-use?
Industrial and ag.
Yeah.
So whoever would buy it, is it somebody that the one that's, whoever would buy this property would be somebody that would buy the house along with the lot, so they would buy that all together, same buyer, somebody looking also to live and to reside in the property, or looking at it?
It'll be a builder. It'll be somebody that wants to develop. Would you agree, Erin?
That's what I think, because I talked to both. The property's just outside the city limits of Fort Collins, and so I talked to the county to see, you know, what the probability of it getting rezoned was, and they said it's highly likely that they could rezone it to multifamily, but they would weigh heavily on the city's future plans for that area, because it's likely going to be brought into the city in the next few years. And so talked to the city, they have it slated for multifamily. So, you know, rezoning is a, you know, 9-month process and it costs some money, but with that knowledge, it kind of opens it up more to someone who's to a developer or builder, actually, because there is a shortage of lots available in the area, especially that close to the city.
Yeah, and the way that we're doing the way we're doing this deal, you know, a lot of wholesaling, we have to find cash buyers. But in this particular deal, we can find a conventional buyer as well, because it's not going to look like a quick flip by any means. So, mm-hmm. So somebody can come in with any kind of financing they want, and there's not going to be any red flags.
Because it could also be, you know, it could also, that's one of the reasons we decided to open it up, because it is zoned industrial on the 2 lots. You know, some company could come in and, you know, like a storage place, they always kind of go there. They can build storage units, or someone wants to, who has like equipment, they could buy the house and then store their equipment on the land. So we're just not sure who the ultimate buyer is, but it opens it up to a lot of buyers when we go ahead and list it on the open market.
Right. And Chico, it's Colorado, so they could have a couple of pot farms, really nice pot farms there. Not that I'm...
It's true. We checked into it.
good job, Aaron. That was a lot of fun and great hanging out with you as well for dinner.
Thank you.
So I'm going to put you back on hold, Aaron. Another one. I'm going to bring Art on. I heard that Art texted me the other night and said he bagged the elephant. So Art, I brought you in. Are you? Can you hear me?
Hey, Gary.
Hey, am I accurate? Did I speak too soon, or did you bag an elephant?
Yeah, I nailed it. I nailed it. I nailed half of it. I got the front half. I'm just waiting for the back half. There's two partners. But the biggest part and the hardest part is over, and that was coming to terms on the pricing, and that's done. So he signed. He's getting his partner to sign, and then I have the buyers keep texting me wanting to know when I can give them addresses, so it's going to
go. Let me ask you, you and I reviewed pricing with you last week, and I thought you needed to negotiate a little bit better with the seller to get a better price on a few of those. Did that go well?
It did, and there were just a few properties that he just wasn't willing to bend simply because it was sentimental value, you know, and I wasn't going to really – I didn't really want to beat him up. I really took control of the meeting because this guy's kind of all over the place. You know, he started with – you know, I talked to appraisers and I got comps and – So I listened to him, and then I said, well, let me just stop you right there, Ned. I said, look, I've done my homework. I said, you know, what you're telling me, here, let me put it in front of you. These are your comps. These are the sales in the area. And this is where I need to be to get the deals bought. And after that, he just shut up, and we went through every one of them, and I put the numbers down on the contracts, and he signed, and I said, just get John, your partner, to sign, and let's get this moving.
Nice. What do you estimate your net on this will be?
It'll be a little over $100,000 on this. Because some of the ones that you know, it'll probably be well over that. Actually, you know, I'm thinking about it because two of the properties already got sold, and I'll make probably $40,000 on those between the two, $45,000 just between those two, because the one it's just a complete turnkey. I got it for $300. I have to go. It was funny. He goes, I need a number in the threes on this one. I said, okay, 301. He goes, okay. So I took it for 301. I know I can sell that one for 3.25. And the other one, he just had it priced right. I didn't really have to beat him up. I did what you told me. I started with the easy ones, you know, the ones that we were in agreement upon, so that really kind of set the tone for the rest of the meeting. And the one I got in Oakland for $200, I already have it sold for $225. I could probably get $220, I'm sorry. That was the high end for this buyer. In fact, he just texted me while we're sitting here, wants to know when he can get through the property. So they're sold. So that's $40,000 right there, or $45,000. And then the other ones, you know, it just depends. I have a guy that I'm working with, another. He's actually a realtor investor. We just did our first deal together, a real small shitting deal, actually, but it's been sitting around since September, and I just said, okay. I went back to the seller, gave him a haircut for about $5,000-$6,000, and I sent it over to him, and he's got a buyer for it, so we'll split it. So I'll make it, you know, a couple $1,000 on it. Not major, but it's off my plate. That's the main thing, and just focus on the new ones.
Yeah, that's awesome. You know, Chris, when I was running through the math on for Art, and we were going through the numbers, and as I was looking at everything, I basically said, you know, based on these, you should probably come up with a number between 8% and 10% of the sale price. So if he's selling it for how much money Art should make on a flip.
Mm-hmm.
So what I did is I said, okay, for $220,000, back of the envelope, between 8% and 10% of that, you know, $20,000, right? So I said, okay, if you can sell this thing for $220,000, then you need to get it at $200,000, and just go through all of your deals, and then you can actually explain that. You can have that in the back of your hand if you're having a discussion with the seller. So sometimes it doesn't matter. Sometimes you just need to have an answer. There was an old thing in sales in my software days. If you don't know it, name it. That's where all the techno stuff came up, you know, CRM and all the just buzzwords and different names. Those were all created by salespeople because they were asked something and they needed a name, and so they came up with a name. And sometimes when you just have an answer in the back of your, you know, sellers will actually say, okay, that makes sense. But if you have to think through it. So that's how we came up with it. We came up and just said 8 to 10% is his profit, and calculate it that way, and then go back to the seller. And then also we looked at the deals. He had, I don't know, 6 or 7, 8 different properties. And I said, give the seller the ones that you're the closest on price, start with those. And the ones that become more difficult, then use that at the end to negotiate and get them started with good news, as opposed to going to the
way
to kind of rearrange that. I think that helps. So you give a smile to a seller and get them excited, because after they know that they've just sold the first three, then all of a sudden you're going to give them bad news, and you want to do it at, you know, the right time. So awesome, Art. Any other points you want to share with the group that are good lessons learned on this?
You know, patience, you know, is a virtue, because this deal has been percolating for 9 months. And, you know, it happened because of my consistent follow-up. You know, 9 months is a long time to wait on a deal. But, again, if you know what you have and you know what you're sitting on, it's just not something that you want to say, oh, this guy's never going to sell. He wanted to sell. I always knew he wanted to sell, and I just had to be patient. And patience is not one of my virtues.
Yeah.
You know, I'm like, let's get it done. Let's move on. You know, when I was learning sales, it was cash or trash. You know, either you're gonna buy or you're not. You know, but
right.
So,
patience isn't one of my virtues either. Sitting right on my wall, I wrote I got it right in front of me. I should take a picture. It says Psalms 37:7, which is have patience. And I always have to go back. patience is so important. You know, for $100,000, you waited 9 months and you did what you needed to do, but for $100,000, it's worth it.
Yeah, I mean, I'll take it all day long. I just wish I had more of them, you know. But,
yeah.
You know, again, I'm getting smarter as I go, and I've only been at this, you know, what, a little over a year now?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and I think back, Chris, what your comment was a while back, you know, just think about where you're going to be a year from now, what you didn't know and what you know now. I mean, that comment was just so true because, you know, I thought I knew a lot, but I didn't know jack shit. I really didn't. And, you know, the more scenarios you go through, the more you learn, and that's why I'm, you know, going to put another tool in my toolbox, you know, with these Lou Brown courses, start learning, you know, a different avenue so that I'm, you know, my goal is ultimately for 2016 is to do 10 deals a month, minimum, 10 deals a month. And so I'm figuring in order to do that, I'm going to, you know, I have the leads. I have the ability to get the properties. That's not an issue. I have the ability to get the cash buyers now, which was a big hurdle for me. You know, I'm leaving a lot of money on the table. I am definitely leaving a lot of money on the table. And that just doesn't sit well with me, so that's why I'm going to do those courses and, you know, learn how to do the creative financing and just start with the simple things first. You know, my brain likes to understand something and then build upon it. So, you know, I'll do simple deals because, you know, case in point, I've got leads where I know they're not a wholesale deal. You know, the property is in a great area. I could probably do creative financing on it. The lady wants $360,000 for the property. It's probably worth what she's asking. But that's a deal that I don't have the knowledge and the know-how to knock down. And that's not going to happen next year.
Awesome. And Art, you, as I recall, you didn't really have any real estate. This was your first entry into real estate flipping, right?
Yeah. My background is I owned a mortgage company for 25 years. So the back end, it was a no-brainer, you know, doing the title work and how that all went down. So really the learning curve was you know, just getting the buyers, finding the buyers, and then really learning how to pull properties out of the sellers. You know, I got this guy, I mean, two properties, one three-unit, one two-unit, in just a perfect area, you know, and he wants what the assessed value is, and I'm going to give them the assessed value, and I could probably double the price and still sell them. They're just in the perfect area of Pittsburgh that's booming, in East Liberty and Highland Park, and it just, you know, I'm going to knock these down tomorrow, and, you know, I have the list of buyers for these two properties. I have like 7 or 8 buyers, you know, in that area that want these properties. And, you know, so it's just, you know, but he was a hang-up. He was a hang-up. So follow up.
Yeah.
One question I had for you, a question and a comment. All right. Obviously, buyers was something that you struggled with initially, and you probably tried a bunch of stuff. What would you consider, just for everyone's sake here, where's the 80-20 for you? Is there an 80-20 for you in terms of buyers after everything you've tried? If you had 10 things you could do for buyers, but you could only limit it to 2 or 3, what would those two or three be for you?
As far as attracting the buyers or finding them?
Yeah, getting the buyers, the right buyers on your list so you can, you have a chance of selling more deals, selling more money, et cetera.
Yeah, I think the biggest turning point for me was in your comments, really, Chris, I think, I don't remember if it was Gary or it was Chris, but it was getting out there. I was sitting behind my desk, okay? I was sitting behind my desk and trying to do everything via my laptop. When I started networking, meeting different people, going to the RIA meetings, just, you know, I'm a kind of shy guy when I go into a public place. I'm very low-key.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I just knew, you know, this was my opportunity to, you know, say, hey, here I am. I've got properties. You want to buy them? You want to buy properties? You know, this is what I got. Second thing would be, I built the website with the properties on it. It cut down my time frame of emailing people over and over and over and over again, the same information, writing new emails over and over and over and over again.
Right.
You know, so that really helped. And then, you know, a lot of my buyers actually came from Craigslist and, you know, learning how to price my properties, you know, at the beginning it was, I definitely overpaid for the properties, but I grew a set of balls and just decided that, you know what, I have to make money and, you know, I'm not moving these properties because they're overpriced.
Mm-hmm.
So I just go in and, you know, I figure out what I want to make, and I know what the market is going to bear and what another investor is looking at. That was the third thing. I started learning to look, you know, at how an investor is going to view the property. You know, I got more into the cost to cure. I paid more attention to when I was touring the property, you know, the foundation, the furnace, checking for termites, you know, checking the roof, counting all the windows, seeing if they were, you know, original and needed to be updated. So I had a good number in my head to go back to the seller with and say, okay, you know, your cost to cure is going to be roughly $15,000. You know, you wanted, you know, $25,000 for it. You know, the market is, that's high end on the market. You know, I'm going to offer you, you know, $5,000 for the property. And this is why. And they're taking it, you know, and I'm turning around, I'm selling them for 15, you know, as much as I could get, you know.
Yeah, that's awesome. Hey, Art, if anybody has a question for Art or for Aaron or for Chris or myself, you can press *5 and we can bring you in the call. I think this is, I'm going to keep you live here, Art.
Okay.
Justin, sorry, okay, Justin, you're live.
Hello?
Yes.
Justin.
Yes, hi. So I have a situation that has arisen here in the past 24 hours, and I'm trying to remain calm, but trying to get your guys' advice on this. So I had a lead in Washington State, and the woman had tenants in there who wouldn't pay, who wouldn't move out. I finally went by the house one day, or she called me out of the blue. Hey, you're persistent. She'd got one of like the follow-up sequences in the hard offer that we'd mailed to her. And the price that she needed to get was $200,000. I drove down to the property, had the locks changed for her, told her, you know, hey, we're coming to some cold weather here. You got to get this utilities on in your name. Otherwise, you know, we're going to have freezing weather. Your pipes are at risk. Got the deal locked up at 200, tried to go back and renegotiate. She absolutely wouldn't budge. When we wrote up the deal, it was buyer pays all closing costs, with the exception of, in the state of Washington, we have an excise tax. The excise tax, the default, if you sell through a realtor, the default is that the seller pays. 99 times out of 100, the seller pays this excise tax. The exception might be some sort of creative deal or where the person has no equity and no money to come to the table. Anyway, it was clearly written, clear as day, buyer will pay all closing costs except for the excise tax. I went out, I found my buyer. My buyer got his non-refundable deposit into escrow. We're all set to close, and my normal closer is on vacation, so we had the B team come in. Well, the B team screwed up the settlement statement and put all these closing costs. The woman freaks out. We get the corrected settlement statement over to her, and it shows the excise tax. I had a conversation with the woman yesterday. She was adamant she didn't want to pay the excise tax, and I said, you know, hey, Charmé, it says right in our purchase and sale agreement, we're going to pay for all the closing costs with the exception of the excise tax. To start, it's not a closing cost. It's charged by the state of Washington. I don't have any control over that.
What's the excise tax and what's your net on the deal?
My net is 10. The excise tax is 1.75% of the purchase price, so it's going to be $3,500.
Okay.
So this isn't the biggest deal in the world to begin with. I thought I had smoothed everything over with her last night, and her words to me were, I guess I must have overlooked that in the contract, and we were going to have the notary go back out there. She got on a plane today, called the escrow company from the airport to basically say, there's no way I'm paying the excise tax.
I have my answer for you already. I'd take the money and pay the excise tax and move on. If you can, because your potential is to lose the deal, and if you could have just split it with her and done 1750. But I would move on. I'd get the money, I'd close the deal, and take some lessons learned for the next deal.
The lesson learned
is close the deal and take the money. I wouldn't be fighting over the $3,500. It sounds like you got a crazy lady that might. I was figuring that she went silent and called the title company and pulled the deal. I mean, that would be a bigger loss. I'd take the money.
Can you split it with the buyer?
I asked the buyer very specifically and said, "Hey, man, what do you want to do? Are you willing to let this deal blow up?" And he said, "I am."
Yeah.
I close the deal, dude. $6,500 bucks. All right, take it, move on. It happens. It happens all the time.
You're killing me with your advice.
Yeah. But I do. You know that normally I would be telling you to go get the money and negotiate with her, but I wouldn't do it. You got the buyer. Buyer wants to close. The whole deal could blow up on you pretty fast.
Oh, I'm well aware of that.
Yeah, I'd get it closed. You could call her and see, see if there's any room and just see if there's any. But I would just be willing to. Don't hardball her. Be friendly. Don't go back to the contract. Doesn't matter. You know, you're gonna piss her off. But try to be real friendly and just say, look, you know, I apologize that this is unknown. Would you be willing to split it with me? And if she says absolutely not, then say okay.
Okay.
Money and run. Yep. That's what I do.
All right.
Cool.
Okay. Thanks.
Awesome. All right. If you've got a question, press *5. *5. Chico, any other comments on that?
No, that's, you know, sometimes you get to the end and stuff like that happens, and you just, you know, I've had deals like that where we're trying to make 15 grand and walk away with 3,500. So sometimes you just can't control those things, and you just, you know. So
in Starbucks on Friday, and with Aaron. And the seller was looking really disappointed for only getting 20 grand. And so it was a little, you know, here we are ready to close. And I looked at the guy, and it's like he could actually walk away right now and say, I have too many questions, right? Here we're trying to sign the contract and get the deed and everything else. And so you know, he wanted a lot more. And I basically said, hey, how about this? And I made that split decision because, you know what, for 100 grand, I don't mind giving up 7,500 bucks.
Nice.
So sometimes you have to do that. It's negotiation. And sometimes you win, sometimes you lose. You try to put something that's always a win-win. You got to give to get. So
I was going to make, Art, are you still on the line?
Who?
Art. Is Art still on the line?
Yeah. Art, I just, you're live.
Oh.
Yeah, I'm here, Chris.
I don't remember. Maybe you or Gary. Have I ever mentioned about using other wholesalers' list to gauge, to use that instead of, for market analysis instead of comps through RealQuest or MLS?
No, how do you do that?
So, I don't know if I talked about this. So, you know, whenever you're doing comps, right, you're always looking at historical data. Okay, so if you're pulling up RealQuest comps, and even if you're pulling up 3 to 4 months back, you're still getting 3 to 4 months, you know, back in sales. And so those numbers may or may not be accurate depending on how the market is going, if it's up or down. Now if you say go MLS and you look at the MLS data, MLS data is kind of off the shelf, right? So in other words, there's transactions that happen with realtors, et cetera, but there's a whole other series of transactions that happen through private hands, and those are the ones that RealQuest picks up. But again, they're historical. So in a market like here in South Florida, I want to know, you know, there's a price that I might be thinking of, but perhaps the market has jumped up, or maybe there's more demand. So how do you gauge that? You could look at MLS actives, but again, MLS actives. Typically, it's not the best gauge. So what I found that helps in terms of us is that we take and we do this in Gmail. So I would say you create a Gmail account just for this, and you subscribe to as many different wholesalers lists as you can. Everybody and their mother, whoever you can get. And so what will happen is over the period of the next 2 or 3 weeks, and it builds up. So mine, I have 6 months or more of data. You then build up all these emails with all these wholesalers when they're sending out deals. And so then what we do is, most of the time, whenever we're looking now at a property and trying to make a determination in terms of what the price should be, instead of going to RealQuest or instead of going to the MLS, we do a search in that Gmail account under that zip code to see what are the other wholesalers pitching. And many times, so for example, if I'm looking at a zip code 33147, we got a deal there. So, you know, I might just do a search under that zip code and look at the most recent a couple weeks emails, and I might notice that, hey, you know what, mine's a 3-2, and these are the 3-2s being pitched here, and this is kind of what they're asking. All these wholesalers are asking this particular price point for the 3-2s, and so I'll gauge my price based on that more so than I would on the RealQuest data, right, because now that, and so if I wanted to go a step further, I could say, well, let me, you know, these three properties here seem to be the most like mine, and it looks like these wholesalers are asking $110,000 for a 3-2 as a wholesale deal. So I might then go in and look up that property address, and I might see that, hey, that property address has been circulating over the last 3 or 4 months with 3 or 4 different wholesalers. So it means that even though that price may not be the best price, or I might see and say, hey, that's the first time I've seen that property. It doesn't show up on any wholesalers list. And so then I use that, so, and especially like if I'm looking at a duplex or a triplex, I'll do a search on the duplex or triplex, and then I'll see, hey, what are the ROI numbers that these things are being pitched at? So I say, hey, you know, everybody's pitching their deals at 16% ROI, let's price ours at 17 or 18, which means that then leave enough, a little bit of a room for the other wholesaler to come in, but it'll be a much better deal than everything else that's being put out there. And so I find that is kind of like our hack for kind of checking, hey, we know what the RealQuest data shows, but what does the active data today show in terms of activity and the properties that are floating around? And maybe there might be, I might be a chance that we can get more. There's a guy in CG I kind of walked through this in at dinner, Collective Genius, a mastermind, Martin, and I explained this to him, and he said he implemented it, and he said he was able to bump up his assignment fees by a little bit over 10 grand just by realizing that, hey, I'm asking a lot less than what everybody else is pitching these deals for. I don't know if I went over that or if that makes sense, explaining it that way.
Yeah, no, that makes perfect sense.
So that's just something you could do in order to just, so I would just start doing that, you know, and I did it by necessity because I was just, there were so many of these wholesalers' emails and I had to put a separate email address and I just said, hey, maybe let me search and see what I find because I can't figure out what this property is worth, and I just found that for us works really well, especially in a wholesale deal. So anyway, just thought I'd share that. I didn't know if I had talked about that before, so that's why I asked you, Art, because you've been on most of the calls, and so maybe you would be one to remember that.
Yeah, no, I don't recall that that one at all.
Okay. So maybe something to test and to try and see whether or not you can use that as a gauge on the market as your pricing stuff.
Okay, that'd be great. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
If you have a question, press star 5, or we will call the day. So star 5 if you have a question. Going one. Going twice. All right. So that's a wrap. All right, everybody. Let's see. Next week, the week of Christmas. Actually, Chris and I are not, well, we'll actually do one more call next week. So we're going to be live the 22nd of December. And then the following 2 weeks, we will not be having our call. So I just note this, our team will also send out a notice that there will be no huddle call on the 29th of December or on the 5th of January. So just a heads up, and we'll reconvene on the 12th of January. All right, so have a great week, and chat with you next week. Take care.